I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The gift of having a show of your own, especially on the internet, is the ability to do whatever it is you want. That means talking about things that one is interested in and not having to worry if others will care. Though I suspect you'll be interested in hearing from my guest now. He is Carlos Celdran in the Philippines. He's a well-known tour guide, performance artist, and cultural and political activist. He's been dubbed the Pied Piper of Manila. He was in Vancouver this weekend conducting the popular walking tours that have gotten him written up in Time, among other worldwide publications. I've occasionally had guests on talking about the Philippines. Its politics, history, and culture interest me, and my parents happen to be from the Philippines. In February, we mark the 25th anniversary of EDSA 1 and the People's Power Revolution with Phil Bronstein. Miguel Sahuco was on last year for his book Ilustrado, as was Winnie Monsaud, who gave us a bit of an overview of last year's presidential election. Now, Mr. Celdran is an ideal guest for the show, as his vocation and avocation is a confluence, if you will, of Philippine history, politics, and culture. We'll talk about the tours here in Vancouver and in Toronto and the reaction had at those, as well as the politics in his country, as he's a vocal and conspicuous proponent of the Reproductive Health Bill, to the point where last September he was arrested for a protest he conducted at a mass at the Manila Cathedral. The RH bill debate is regular news in his country and has ramifications for where the country's headed. His website is at carloscelldran.com. You can get information on the walking tours he conducts in Manila there. It's also fitting that we're taping this the weekend of June 12th, the day Filipinos mark as Independence Day. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Vancouver, Carlos Celdran. Good morning, Mr. Celdran.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. How are you enjoying Vancouver?
Oh, the weather is amazing. It's nice to have some cold weather for a change.
Yeah.
Compared to the humidity and heat that is the city of Manila.
Whose idea was it to bring you to Canada and do these tours here in Vancouver and in Toronto?
Well, I've had a long-standing collaboration with a group called Kapisanan, which is a Filipino arts and culture organization in Toronto. Located in Kensington Market, and so a couple of years ago, they brought over the Intramuros tour / performance for the first time, and we're restaging it again, or we restaged it again a couple of weeks ago, along with the new work that I did called the Living La Vida Imelda, which is also another performance and tour.
Yeah. Now, the people that go to the events, I guess, here and in Toronto, are those, are they Filipinos? Are they OFWs? Who are they?
Well, in the Philippines, my audience is mostly foreigners, mostly
right.
Tourists, American, English-speaking tourists, and Filipino-Americans and Canadians. Here in Toronto, a lot of them were Filipino-Canadians, first and second generation, and the people who love them.
Yeah. How long ago was it that you started these tours in Manila?
Around 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was part of an advocacy that I was doing. I was working as one of the directors of an organization called the Heritage Conservation Society, which is a nonprofit organization that was supposed to teach us about the importance of preserving architecture, about preserving Filipino-built heritage. And so I started a tour program with them around the historic parts of Manila to educate people. And then a couple of years later, when they reorganized the Heritage Conservation Society, they took away the outreach education program, and pretty much they just gave it to me and said, if you want to keep doing this, do it yourself. So I kept doing the tours around Manila in the historic areas, but since I have a background in arts and theater, as it went along through the years, I started adding a costume, I started adding a hat, I started adding music, I started making it more multimedia, just to make it more interesting for myself, and eventually it became more interesting for others.
And so what's the reaction from people at home, say the Filipinos in Manila? I mean, do they like the work that you do? I mean, I guess they're not your audience, right?
Oh, yeah. No, they are. Actually, believe it or not, quite a great number of people come to my tours are local Filipinos who live within the city itself. We who live in Manila are actually kind of ignorant of the history of our own city. And so a lot of people come to tours to sort of, like, fill in the gaps. Because it's a very misunderstood city. A lot of people think that Manila is this gritty, hideous place. But, you know, once you look through all the grime and once you look through all of the bad elements, they do some sort of visual archaeology, so to speak. You're going to find a city that's really rich in history and beauty and poetry. I really believe if you can't find beauty and poetry in Manila, you can never find beauty and poetry anywhere.
The arrest, the protests that you did last September, did that affect your business at all?
Actually, the numbers kind of remains the same. Fortunately or unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the press and media, of course, naturally, it did increase.
You mentioned that people think of Manila as this gritty, hideous place. Who's responsible for that sort of perception of it?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the decentralization of management when it comes to controlling the city of Manila. Once upon a time, in the 1970s, Imelda Romualdez Marcos was the governor of all of Manila. So pretty much it was underneath one hand, so power was much more centralized and things got done faster, and there was an overall vision for the city. But once Imelda left and Cory Aquino came in and everything devolved, the position that was once held by Mrs. Marcos is now being held by other people who don't hold that much power. So pretty much now Manila has become a city of 12 different little cities run by 12 different mayors who have 12 different systems of getting things done. So hence you get all the disorganization. But the way Manila really got to be where it is today, which is kind of, as I said, misunderstood and gritty, had a lot to do with World War II. When the Americans came in 1945 and blasted our city off the face of the earth, pretty much the city never recovered.
And so sort of the misunderstanding that say, people in this country have about the Philippines.
They think Manila got ugly on its own. Trust me, no, we had a lot of international help.
Yeah, and so when you tell people this, and I understand in your tours that you talk about this, do you think you change people's minds?
Some of them, I manage to change their minds. A lot of them, some of them get offended, especially when I talk about the General Douglas MacArthur's role in the destruction of our city. Because a lot of people think that the Japanese destroyed Manila, but the Japanese were only in charge of massacring everybody. It was the American forces who completely obliterated the city through artillery fire. So it is kind of ever since World War II, the city has never really been able to pick itself up and retain the urban fabric that we had before 1945. And so, you know, a lot of Americans come along with the kind of disillusion that all of a sudden we're not viewing General Douglas MacArthur as the hero that he's supposed to be.
Well, we're talking, as I said, on the weekend of June the 12th. Do you think about what being Filipino means to you around this time of year? I mean, I guess you do it year-round.
Yeah, actually, worrying about Filipino identity is something that we don't worry much about back home, because every day we're just so busy being Filipino that we never need or find the time to reflect upon or to gaze at our navel, so to speak. But June 12th is a... I don't know. There's many days for when you consider independence. Is it really June 12th? Is it really July 4th? I mean, if you really come to think about it, well, this is just on a personal level. When the Philippines only really ran itself without any imperialist forces pulling the strings behind the curtain, so to speak, was really only in 1991 or 92 when we kicked out the U.S. bases. So I personally really believe our Independence Day is somewhere in November of 1991 and not in June 12, 1898.
But two naval gaze for just a sec here, because you're in Vancouver to sort of talk about being Filipino, yeah, and talk about Filipino culture. I guess it's impossible to define a people, to define a culture. But I mean, do you try at all?
I just try to tell people not to worry about it so much, because the Philippines is really one of the first postmodern cultures, so to speak. Our culture has been infected by foreign cultures way ahead of a lot of people back in the region where we're in, especially such disparate cultures like the United States and Spain, which is completely out of its context when it comes to Asia. So I think the Philippines is really one of the first countries to go down the road where the rest of the world is going now. I mean, right now the world's getting so globalized, and cultures, the defining lines between cultures are getting thinner and thinner and thinner. That happened to us back in 1898. Hell, that happened back to us in 1521.
When we talk about Filipino culture, I seem to wade through it through the internet, because that's the only sort of, living in Vancouver, that's the only sort of way you get to. It's much more nuanced than it would appear on the surface.
I think a lot of the problems, especially us in the modern age, when it comes to Filipino identity, is that I really believe that there is this false romanticism that we have. Like, we think that there is this pure pre-Hispanic culture that, you know, that we're all missing out upon and that we should go back and rediscover it, and there we will truly find our roots. But I really think that culture is always in flux. It's totally fluid. There's no sense in looking back. I mean, the Spanish, the American, and all of these other international influences, we should not be looking at it as pollutants anymore. But really just part of a process of getting, of moving forward. Because a lot of us, we're looking back too much. We really should stop looking back and just start moving forward and see where we can go from here.
And where do you think the Philippines is going from here?
Well, the economy is getting better. Now thanks to the Reproductive Health Bill and our president's support for it, and we got the numbers all in Congress. It's just a matter of time, hopefully, before it's passed, to prove that we're no longer the last bitch of the Catholic Church. I think the Philippines is moving into the 20th century slower than most other countries, but we're getting there.
Back to the sort of cultural part, and I'm going to tie this into politics, is if you watch sort of you watch TFC here in Canada, mm-hmm. You see sort of the game shows and the soap operas, and sort of the stuff that you and I have been talking about and your work, there seems to be sort of this high culture and the sort of the popular culture that everyone seems to buy into, and they sort of come together, I guess, in politics. I mean, mm-hmm. That's my perception of it. And then we see that with the RH bill and the debate around that, where people like yourself, who make a lot of sense, get drowned out by sort of celebrities like Manny Pacquiao.
Well, you know what? Manny Pacquiao, we all know that he's a great boxer. But if you actually are looking at media and everything, everybody thinks that his position, the RH bill, is a joke. His wife was caught taking birth control pills and admitting it in an article. He had to backtrack on it. I mean, people are making jokes about it on TV. I mean, the Philippines is a literate country. Well, I really don't think that Manny Pacquiao has as much influence as a lot of people abroad would like to think that he has. I mean, think about it. He only won a congressional seat. Congressional seat is just the same as winning the town sheriff. He'll never win a national seat, especially after what he did now with the Reproductive Health Bill, of which 70% of Filipinos support and were mortified by his position. I mean, it's not that we're going to start, we're not black and white. We're not going to say, oh, we hate your position of the RH bill, so we're going to think you're a terrible boxer. No, we're a thinking nation. We can separate these two things. And if you really come to think about it, this is his second time to run for Congress. He lost the first time. And that's why he had to switch to another smaller town. So, I don't know. For democracy to work, I wish, you know, this idea of democracy, I wish Manny Pacquiao really well. Because if we're going to believe in this concept called democracy, we got to respect the fact that people like him will be people's choices. But we also have to also give the Philippines some credit in making right choices. And I think pretty much him winning a congressional seat is a non-threatening choice.
When I had Professor Monsad on last year, she talked about her frustration that Philippine politics isn't really ideological and the sort of left-right spectrum doesn't count, that it's more about personalities. And I'm thinking about...
That's American-style democracy for you. It's a popularity contest. I mean, not that I'm saying that the Philippines doesn't deserve democracy, but I still think that we're in a very early stage and we're figuring out what to do with it. So, you know, once the population gets more educated, once this younger generation, of which are 22 years old on the average, 50% of the Philippines is below 22, believe it or not, it's in this new generation that the hope lies of making better decisions. But I really think that we're making better decisions than ever before. I mean, Noynoy Aquino won for the last election and not Erap Estrada again.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that one of the tours you did in Toronto was the Imelda Marcos one. She gives you material constantly. How do you explain the sort of fascination with the Marcoses that after all these years of being deposed and sort?
There are changes in the total social order. You have to understand the Philippines was run by the Philippine landed classes and the Catholic Church. So President Marcos and Imelda were really the only historical break from the landed classes and the whims of the Catholic Church. It was President Marcos's way or the highway. I mean, if you come to think about it, back during the 1980s and 1970s, majority of the Filipino masses supported the Marcoses. It was really the 1986 revolution, in my eyes, was really more of a class war, more than anything else. Wherein President Marcos's new society order, which ended up being kind of going downhill and rotten in the end, was replaced by the old order of the landed classes, which is Coria Aquino and her haciendas, and the Catholic Church, represented by the man beside her, Jaime Cardinal Sin. And from there on until today, they're still the people who are ruling the country, the elites and the Catholic Church. And so that's why the Marcoses still resonate, and a lot of people still romanticize them, because every president after Ferdinand Marcos has only proven to make Ferdinand Marcos look better.
And even the sort of the corruption and the human rights violations, that stuff.
How different is that from the corruption and human rights violations that we're seeing today?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, really, I mean, if one really comes to think about it, food was cheaper back then. The population was smaller back then. The Philippines had a higher profile on the international stage back then. So where did it all go wrong? During Marcos or after Marcos?
Now, I know you voted
for... We're obviously not richer now,
yeah.
So we have to start questioning that as well.
Yeah.
We have to stop blaming him for everything and start looking within ourselves now.
I know you voted for someone else in last year's presidential election, but I'm wondering, what's your take on Mr. Aquino and how he's doing as president?
His heart is in the right place. He's doing things a little bit too slow for me, but I guess that's what happens when you have sort of like a decentralized government. He's run by a lot of advisors, and he's hoping that Mar Rojas will also take a greater role, his vice presidential candidate that lost in the last elections. I'm still giving him a chance. I'm not going to be calling for his resignation anytime soon, because as I said, his heart is in the right place. I just wish that he could put the pedal to the metal, so to speak, because time is really running out.
One of the things that your country's politics is known for, is and we've talked about already, is sort of this perception of corruption. And Mrs. Monsad was a big hit on YouTube last year with this lecture that she gives her students at the University of the Philippines about asking her students to stay in the country. When Miguel Sahuco was on last year, I asked him if he thought that the sort of the diaspora has to come back and make the Philippines better again. What's your view on sort of Filipinos from without and what they can do to make the country better?
I actually think the great hope of the Philippines lies within the diaspora, because they're the people who can actually look at the Philippines outside of the fishbowl and who are not too, they actually have, as I said, enough time to actually navel gaze. And because of the equality that they get, I guess, and the level playing field from living abroad, like in Canada or the United States, we're actually seeing a new generation of Filipinos hanging out and collaborating and working with one another who, if they stayed back in the Philippines, would never hang out. I mean, I'm going and meeting organizations here where the sons and daughters of former gardeners and maids are hanging out with the sons and daughters of nurses, lawyers, doctors, and professionals. I mean, here there's no social stigma in all of them hanging around together. Back home, they will never have an opportunity to hang out and collaborate together simply because of the social strata. And that's why I think, like, the diaspora is really where the hope lies. When they, like Jose Rizal, goes abroad, sees a different ways of doing things, and goes back home and applies it. To be Filipino, I really believe, has a lot to do with our placement in the world. The globalized Filipino is actually the Filipino that will help us push forward. Because the provincial Filipino and the localized and insular Filipino, obviously, our mindset and what we've been doing hasn't been working. So hopefully the diaspora will come back home and apply what they've learned.
What do you think the Canadian, or the North American for that matter, what do you think they can learn from someone like Jose Rizal?
As I said, being globalized is the way to go.
Yeah.
Jose Rizal believed that if you're going to be an effective Filipino, you have to know the ways of the world. You have to fit yourself within an international context. And then taking that international context and bringing it back home is a much more effective way in improving the local milieu.
And he's a hero for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for me. I'm a Rizal person more than a Bonifacio person.
Yeah.
Truth be told. Yeah, so I mean, I think what the Filipino Canadian could probably learn from him is don't be too embarrassed about being too Western or the influences that you feel are not Filipino. Just embrace what you are. I mean, before being Filipino, just be a good person.
I'm sure you're asked about politics and whether you'd run yourself. Are you asked that often?
To what?
To run for office?
Yeah, no, somebody said I could actually run for senator, but I believe that politics is really the least effective way in helping the Philippines. You want to help the Philippines in the most inefficient manner? Run for office.
Carlos, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. It's been an interesting conversation. Enjoy the rest of your stay here in Vancouver.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I also want to acknowledge Sammy Joe Rambawa and RJ Aquino for arranging this interview with Carlos Soldran today. They did so long after it was beneficial for them and the events that they're producing with Carlos here in Vancouver. The website for more, carlosseldran.com. Carlos Soldran on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.